Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. It's a Monday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show, KFH Radio. Bob Lutz, that's me. Jeff Lutz, that's him. We co-host. Max Power produces and engineers, but Andrew Fry in for Max the next couple of weeks. We welcome him to the show.
He's back there. He sure is.
869-1240, the IHOP hotline, if you'd like to get involved. Of course, on Mondays, now that the NFL season is here, we're going to talk a lot about the Sunday action. We'll get into some baseball. We've got Derek Tuttle, the head football coach at Andover Central. They opened with a shellacking of Hutchinson on Friday night. They are the number one ranked team in Class 4A. We'll talk with Derek Tuttle coming up at 2:45. At 3:25, Tim Fitzgerald, GoPowerCat.com. Boy, K-State was really on the ropes in that game against Tulane, but found a way to win it, and they are 1-0 coming back home.
Did they find a way to win it, or did they find a way to not lose it? That's kind of what I saw from Kansas State.
They won it. They
put
together.
There was a bad call in the end zone.
I don't know about that call. That call made my head hurt. I don't know if it's a bad call or not.
They had the ball laid and didn't try to go up by two touchdowns. They gave it back to Tulane. I just didn't like what I saw.
Well, you didn't like what you saw, but they won the game.
Yeah, they ended up with more points.
And they come home, and they're 2-0, and that's where they are. You win a game.
I'll say this.
The big test on the road for them, unlike KU, they passed it.
I don't know. They received a passing grade. Let's just
say
that.
What I just said.
I don't know. You like they passed it, like move on your grade.
Yes. I never said that.
A D is still passing.
Don't put words into my mouth. They got through it. You knew that game was going to be difficult.
Do you feel?
From the get-go. You knew that immediately going on the road, playing a good Tulane team, second game of the year. You haven't quite figured it out. You got a new quarterback.
Quarterback that gave you a lot last year when he played.
Yeah, but he's now the full-fledged
and they're starter. Not really turning him loose. Or it's just I didn't.
Well, fine. I don't care what you thought.
I feel worse about KU and K-State today than I felt
about
them.
Everybody does.
Going into Saturday.
Everybody does. You're part of a big club there. But K-State won. They have Arizona coming up Friday night in Manhattan. First Big 12 game of the year against Arizona. Let me repeat that. KU comes home to face UNLV, licking their wounds, which are plentiful. So we'll talk with Tim Fitzgerald about K-State and get into the whole Big 12 with Fitz coming up at 3:25 today. We'll start with the NFL from yesterday. One of my first reactions, of course, involved my fantasy team, which I was concerned about early. They kind of caught fire, but then Virgil's team caught fire.
Uh-oh, did you lose?
Cooper Kupp had
that's a problem.
Heck of a game. And now we're pretty much deadlocked going into tonight where I have Christian McCaffrey and he has Breece Hall.
Uh-oh.
How do I cheer against Breece Hall?
Well, hope that he does well, but McCaffrey does a little bit better.
By the way, your team's awful.
Well, not necessarily. We got a couple guys going today.
You don't have a chance of winning.
I don't know if we have anybody going today or not, to be honest. We got a chance. They still haven't dropped it down to zero. And I don't know if our team's awful. Just had an off week. There's a lot of guys that you look at in fantasy, and they don't do much in week one, and you want to give up on them. Marvin Harrison didn't do a darn thing.
I may give up on him.
There were some quarterbacks that didn't do a whole lot.
You know who did do a darn thing? Both David Montgomery and Jameson Williams for the Lions. Jameson Williams may be plugged into that Marvin Harrison slot.
You think so?
Well, yeah. Did you see him?
He had a great night.
That's a talent. He's been hurt.
People have kind of been predicting this year as the breakout for him.
How'd I get him that late?
Because he hasn't produced yet in the NFL. We're all kind of tantalized by the talent, but what have you done to show me that it's real? And now he has that under his belt. And him and opposite Amon-Ra St. Brown with the running game that they have, Montgomery and Gibbs, the tight end Laporta.
Well, they were barely able to pull that out.
And with Green, well, still the Rams. The Rams are tough. And with Green Bay
losing. Yeah, but the Rams had injuries. I guess you talk about a passing grade.
All you have to do is win. And
well, I just said that about K-State.
Yeah, but that's different.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
How?
College is different.
How is it different?
College is different because it's Tulane and it's Illinois. It's not a team that's necessarily.
Tulane's really good.
Not Tulane. Give me.
Are you kidding?
Get out of here with Tulane.
Did you watch the game?
Yes. Nothing they did.
Did you see that quarterback?
He's fine.
They may not face too many better.
Well, how about you cover somebody? Well, that would be my first.
Well, maybe, you know, you're underselling Tulane.
A guy shouldn't be 30 yards wide open.
It's amazing what you're willing to get on this show and say. It just astounds me sometimes.
Tulane or K-State was, what, a 9.5-point favorite, something like that?
And you lost that game.
Yeah, everybody probably did.
I'll tell you how the picks went, if you're interested. I got two games right. And won the week.
No, you didn't.
I was 2-6 for 22 points because I got my 8-7, and then I got Texas for 7.
Fine.
How about that?
I got 21, though.
You were 2-6. You got Dallas and Detroit. And
Houston didn't cover?
No.
What was their?
2.5.
What'd they win by?
Not that much. They won by 2.
You sure about that?
Yes. And then you got Texas, so you had 17 points. Duda only got 2 games right. They were his 1-2.
Good grief.
And he lost 6 in Michigan. He lost 3 points for the week.
That's not good. We usually don't have negatives.
Max got to 13 for the week, and the big fella had the best week with 3-5. Well, we're off to a rocky start in this thing. And he got 15 points.
I felt like the two most predictable outcomes of the weekend were Dallas stomping Cleveland, Texas stomping Michigan. I don't know why I only put 5 on that game. I was afraid of losing points, but I shouldn't have been. Texas was never going to lose that game or even be threatened. I should have put all 10 on it.
Why didn't you?
Bad logic.
I put 7 on it.
Yeah, I should have put 10. But I talked myself out of it because what if I lose 5? But I was never going to lose 5. I should have gotten 10.
Well, you'll still be scared.
No, I won't.
Next week when we do this again.
If it's a game that is obvious, then I won't.
Well, I'm not going to make it an obvious game.
You don't know.
I do know. I get
you don't know what I feel is obvious.
Well, you're right because you're completely off your rocker. Yesterday, observations. Now, I have YouTube TV now, and I was tempted to click the button that takes me to the NFL Sunday ticket.
That's all you had to do.
I did not. It's a lot of money. I did not do it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a need.
No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think there's a need either, but I was tempted.
You get to watch the Chiefs. You get to watch the national games. There's no other real games that were on Sunday ticket that you just had to see.
I'll do a quick observation on each game. Steelers-Falcons, which I did get to watch.
Get?
Yeah. I mean, I like watching football.
Okay, but do you like watching that?
Sure.
Was that football?
Yeah.
That was literally football.
You didn't watch it.
Yes, I did. It was awful. Yes, I did. That's on Fox.
Pittsburgh plays.
Yeah, but it's not
entertaining.
And they're
going to be good again. They're going to be in the playoffs.
They're not going to be good.
We're going to wonder how in the world. Yeah, they are because they have a good defense.
They're going to have a winning record. That's different from being good.
They're good. Buffalo looked like you know what early. Then they caught fire. And can we throw a ball to Marvin Harrison if we're the Arizona Cardinals?
I don't think Kyler Murray can get down the field as much anymore.
Bears were putrid and won. Without an offensive touchdown. I don't get it. Their defense is, I guess, okay, but their offense flunked. Tennessee should be embarrassed. The Bengals our friends Scott Griffiths and Joel T. Lamerno. You guys are it's a clown show.
I got a Bengals guy at work. He was decked out in Bengals gear today, just really asking for the ridicule that comes along with
that. And he deserved it. Just awful to lose to New England at home in your opening game where hopes are high. People think you got a shot. Nobody thinks that now. The Texans and the Colts, whale of a game. Those two teams are both good and fun to watch. It doesn't get any better. That was the game of the day yesterday.
I didn't get to see it.
Jags and Dolphins, the whole thing with Tyreek Hill before the game, unbelievable. And then for him to come out and catch 7 balls.
Now, shouldn't I be more interested in Jags, Dolphins? Those are two teams with playoff aspirations.
Well, why weren't you interested?
They got young quarterbacks who battled in college.
Why weren't you interested?
Kind of a nothing game to me.
Carolina should fold its franchise. New Orleans is not very good, and they put up 47 and won by 37.
What if New Orleans is good?
They're not.
But what if they are?
I saw enough of the highlights. They're okay. But that Carolina is just awful.
I understand that.
New Orleans is
47 points.
I said New Orleans would win that division. I do think that's the case because I don't think anybody else is good enough to beat them. The Vikings, impressive. Sam Darnold, give it up. I mean, he played well.
Speaking of a team that
completed his first 12 passes.
Sure.
You don't know.
Yeah, why would I?
Because you don't follow this stuff.
No, I don't care. How about that? That he completed this
first 12
passes.
On the other end, you don't care, so you don't follow.
No, I don't care that he completed his first 12 passes. That means nothing.
The Raiders are going to be the Raiders. They had a chance down 5 or 6, down 5, I believe, in the fourth quarter. They had the ball in Chargers territory, 4th and 4, 4th and 3, whatever it was, and decided to punt and try to pin the Chargers down. Well, that didn't go well. The Chargers proceeded to go the length of the field for a touchdown. And I don't know about Antonio Pierce.
Well, that wasn't
my
a good
Raiders
call,
people?
Was it?
Where's Cap? I mean, call him.
I'm not going to call him.
Seahawks look good. Got to see a large part of that game. They're pretty impressive. Denver, I mean, that game was closer than it should have been. But I came away impressed by Seattle. I also came away impressed by Dallas. Cleveland, man, get out of that city, Jeff. That city's not going to do anything for you.
Well, I have no interest in the Browns. Absolutely none. Zero.
That whole city is...
What's wrong with the city?
I don't know. Everybody that plays there doesn't win.
The Cavs were in the playoffs. The Guardians are going to be in the playoffs. I don't understand what your point is.
Buccaneers...
Browns were in the playoffs last year.
They're not very good. Baker Mayfield, 4 touchdown passes. You keep thinking, man, he's just okay, and then he keeps chugging along, putting up good numbers. He's a good quarterback.
He's done it for more than a year now.
And then last night, the Lions in overtime beat the Rams, an entertaining game. It's fun to watch a game in Detroit. Those fans are awesome.
Well, they're ready.
They like that team. They like that coach. They like the vibe. They like everything. That might be my team.
No. No one's doing that anymore.
Let's go back to it.
No, we're done with that. You botched that 7 or 8 times. It's over now. You don't have a team. You don't get a team. Detroit.
My wife kind of likes Detroit, and I was kind of with her last night.
Yeah, but liking a team is not about liking an iteration of the team. You weren't there for the lean years with the Lions. You didn't go through that. So you cannot
be a
Lions fan.
I liked them when they had Barry.
Everybody liked them when they had Barry.
But they were not, they didn't win.
Did you like them when they had Kevin, whatever his name
was? Yeah, I did.
The running back?
Yeah, Kevin Falk.
No.
Who?
I can't remember the guy's name. That's how bad he was. Did you like him when they had John Kitna?
Yeah.
You like him when they had Charles Rogers?
You know, one of the things I've always liked about the Lions? That Lions insignia on their helmet.
That's called a logo.
I like that.
Yes.
What's with your attitude
today?
What's
with your attitude today?
I'm just going through this.
Yeah, we don't need to just... okay, we went through every game. Now what?
Well, I like talking about the NFL.
So do I, but now what? That we've...
Well, observations. What did you take from it?
What did I take from it? That's always a tough question, very broad question. Who are the teams that you know now are going to finish fourth in their division?
I don't know about that. Carolina.
Carolina's going to finish fourth.
Carolina's terrible.
It seems like the Giants will probably finish fourth.
Or the Commanders.
I think the Commanders are better.
That's up for grabs. Commanders were awful. They don't have any defense.
Are the Bengals locked into finishing dead last?
No. The Browns will finish last in that division.
They might make a change at quarterback, though. Cincinnati cannot.
Raiders are going to finish last, undoubtedly. No question.
Even behind Denver.
No question. Absolutely.
So these are teams now with no hope. Tennessee will finish last.
Boy, they look good for a while, though, especially their defense.
Are they going to finish ahead of Houston, Indianapolis, or Jacksonville?
I don't know. I hesitate to just throw in the towel on Tennessee, but they didn't do much offensively. And you got a question, is Will Levis ready to take on? The thing is,
he doesn't have much.
You've got to have an experienced, talented quarterback in this league. These young guys aren't gonna do it immediately.
Levis
had real high hopes for Caleb Williams yesterday. And while he had moments, it didn't look good.
He didn't even throw for 100 yards, did he?
It didn't look good.
He's pretty awful.
I don't know what we're going
to
do.
It's hard. These rookie quarterbacks, people expect them to come in and just be amazing, but it doesn't really work that way. And I'm worried about Caleb Williams because I saw him on the Fox pregame show doing an interview, and they asked, is anything overwhelming you so far? And he was like, nah. And should he be overwhelmed? No. But should he be, you know, ready for whatever the NFL brings at him? I don't think he is. And he got, not humiliated, but he got introduced to the NFL yesterday.
Well, you saw a lot of...
How will he adjust?
You saw a lot of porous quarterbacking. And maybe some of that is youth. Some of it is first game. But you saw that all across the league, that quarterbacks really were struggling. Justin Fields didn't have it. Kirk Cousins, who doesn't have youth to blame, he wasn't very good. So
Nobody was great, it was everywhere.
Really. It was everywhere.
Yeah, it's weird.
The two quarterbacks in the Texans-Colts game were fun. Anthony Richardson, look out. He had moments where he looked all world, and then a couple moments where he was rough.
Well, it's
the talent.
His first year, basically. So, again, that's going to happen. No one's going to play perfect. No one's going to play perfect in week one. Each team will have some wins that'll surprise you, some losses that'll surprise you. That's the NFL. That's just what we're going to get every year. And we had some of those yesterday.
Yeah, we'll see. C.J. Stroud was good. Joe Mixon was phenomenal. 30 carries on a team that you think, well, they're going to throw the ball 4 out of 5 times with Stroud and that receiving core. Joe Mixon was the biggest difference maker yesterday, in my opinion, of all the new players acquired by any team. 100, how many yards? 159. For Joe Mixon. They add that element, and they barely won because Indianapolis has a good team. Those will both be playoff teams, I think.
Well, they looked the part yesterday.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
All right. Who do we have on hold? I have already...
Aaron, I believe, was the
there you go.
Name.
I think you're right. Hello, hey, Aaron. Are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. You can hear me fine?
Yeah. We got you, Aaron.
All right, awesome. So I guess this is about last night's game, the Detroit Lions and the Rams, more so about the fans. I just want you guys to answer me. Am I taking too much stock in this? Am I overreacting? But it really rubs me the wrong way every time Detroit boos Matt Stafford. I might be a hypocrite here. I was at the Chiefs game when they cheered for Matt Castle getting injured. I wasn't proud of that, but it just, I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way. It's like, why are you booing the guy for doing everything he could? I don't know. Am I crazy? Am I taking too much stock in that?
That's well, I don't, listen, I don't know all the history. I don't know what Matt Stafford said. I don't know if he had some parting shots on the way out.
I don't think so.
He certainly did his best for that franchise. But let me explain something about the NFL that may be different. These fans show up hours before games, and they drink. And who knows if who knows if their emotions that they share at these games are real or whether they're enhanced by alcohol.
Right.
I bet you Matt Stafford doesn't lose a minute of sleep.
Fair enough. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah, I'm sure Lions fans felt like it was some sort of a showdown between the guys who got traded for each other. We saw it last year, too, in the playoffs. I think that game was also in Detroit.
Yes, it was.
But it's going to be a barometer. Matthew Stafford went to the Rams and won a Super Bowl, and now the Lions are in contention for that, so there might be
some hard feelings. Have a boo. You're the fan. Go do
I don't know if I'd boo.
You know what I'd do? Maybe I wouldn't boo, but you know, you can do what you want.
Sure.
And I'll say this. When a Cardinals, I'm switching gears to baseball. When a Cardinals legend or somebody prominent that would compare to a Matt Stafford gets dealt to another team or signs a free agent deal with another team and they come back to St. Louis, they almost always get a standing ovation.
Absolutely.
Because Cardinals fans, first of all, they're not inebriated when they go to the stadium.
Of course they are.
For the most part.
It's Busch Stadium.
No, we don't drink there.
Absolutely.
And secondly, Cardinals care about their history. Just this week, they inducted three new members into the Cardinals Hall of Fame, and they had back all these people. It's just amazing.
Who did they give the Red Jackets to this year?
Matt Morris, who was great. An old Cardinal whose name escapes me. I'm sorry. I should know it.
You should.
He's been dead for a long time. Whitey Karowski.
Is that right?
Yeah. I thought of it. I don't know how I pulled that out, but I don't know. And then Dave Duncan.
Shouldn't he already be in?
Should be. Yeah, but he's not. So that's always a really good thing. And they had Mark McGwire came back for it, Tony La Russa, Vince Coleman,
Love Ray Langford,
Ozzie Smith. I mean, all the guys. All the guys.
Sure, Chris why Carpenter. Wouldn't they? It's Hall of Fame weekend.
No Yachty.
Uh-oh.
He has not been seen in St. Louis all year.
What do you make of that?
I don't know what to make of it, but it's strange.
It is a little strange.
I wonder if they're just kind of keeping him under wraps for making the announcement that he's your new Cardinals manager.
Try not to put him in the spotlight too much and get that talk going when there's already a manager in place. Maybe.
Wouldn't that be received well by those of us who...
I would think. But his relationship with the Cardinals over the last year and a half, 2 years has been
strange.
It's been weird.
It's been strange. I don't think you can say it's been bad.
No, it's just been weird.
It's just there hasn't been any relationship.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to think about that.
You went to L.A., ran into some good pitching, as you knew you were going to.
Have you ever had a first place team and just tired of it?
Well, they don't excite you because they don't hit. And it's really hard to...
Well, they don't put the players on the team that can hit. And
they brought up your boy Manzardo.
Yeah.
And a good first game.
And why don't we bench him? And it's just, they don't know what they're doing. At this time of the year, you're supposed to have a lineup in place. You're going to the postseason. I get you want a platoon advantage here and there. But you should be playing nine guys. You should figure out who your best nine are. Play them. Win, get to the playoffs, and be ready.
That lead over the Royals now down to 2.5. Royals swept the Twins. The Twins, boy, did Rocco Baldelli let them have it by not saying anything at all about that series other than, what did he say?
I don't know.
Didn't you read his post game?
I did not.
He just said this is a non-competitive series, and that's all I have to say.
Royals bounced back.
Royals scored 9 runs in 3 games and won them all.
Pitching, that hasn't faltered at all this year.
Royals begin a series in New York now. So what a gauntlet they've been through, and here they are, even with a 7-game losing streak as a part of this, just 2.5 games behind Cleveland.
Yeah, and Cleveland had an 8-game losing streak not too long ago. And they're in they're in Chicago for the White Sox, and they'll lose one of those. So good luck, Royals. They'll probably lose tonight.
Why in the world are you so defeatist?
I'm just going to be so relieved when this season is over.
Really?
Yes. If it doesn't end with a World Series championship, which it likely won't, I'm just ready for it to be over.
Well, you've got Chicago, then you're at home against Tampa and Minnesota. Then you go to the Cardinals. Who are just awful. Then you have a couple at home against Cincinnati. Then you finish the season with 3 against Houston. What's your record right now? Can you hold on?
19 over, I think. I'm not sure.
Can you hold on?
Probably. But I'm just tired. I'm just tired of it.
Well, the Dodgers are good.
Nothing to watch.
You won 1 of 3 against the Dodgers. That's about as much as you could have expected.
I get it, but... And I know that the guys that Cleveland has that are all-stars this year aren't on the level of the guys the Dodgers have. But Shohei Ohtani shows up and hits homers. Mookie Betts shows up and gets some key hits and homered yesterday. Freddie Freeman shows up, plays well. Stephen Kwan is benched yesterday. That's an all-star. Josh Naylor and Jose Ramirez did nothing.
What's Stephen Kwan hitting since... June.
It's
been awful.
He's horrific.
What happened?
And you just leave him at leadoff. This is nothing's wrong here.
What happened? He was flirting with 400.
I think he's dead tired.
He's
but
now
I don't
down
know.
To less than 290.
Correct. He looks tired to me.
Tired?
Yeah.
We said in the 60s when somebody.
Well, whatever.
You know what Bob Gibson
would... When you're tired, you're tired.
You know what Lou Brock would have done if you'd gone to him and said, Lou, you tired? He'd have punched you right in the nose.
You'd have said, yeah, I'm retiring at 32. I'm so tired.
Look when Lou Brock retired.
I know he didn't, but a lot of guys did.
What are you picking on Lou Brock for?
I love Lou Brock.
I'll go to war with him.
See, the worst guy in the 3,000 hit club.
The worst guy.
See, the worst
did
player.
Did you not watch him play?
I'm asking.
No, of course not.
What do you think is the worst modern members? And I'm not going back to Ross Youngs or whoever those old Giants teams had. I want to know, and this obviously is a very high bar, 3,000 hits. Who's the worst guy in that club?
Well, I'll tell you, but it's certainly not Lou Brock. Did you not watch him play in the day?
No, I didn't. I wasn't alive.
Where were you? Miguel Cabrera, no. Albert Pujols, no. Adrian Beltre, no. I haven't run into the worst guy. Ichiro, no. A-Rod, the most bulked up. I don't know if that counts. Derek Jeter, no. Craig Biggio,
he could be.
He'd be in the discussion. Rafael Palmeiro.
Yeah.
Who never met a steroid he didn't like.
That's up there.
Not Ricky Henderson. Cal Ripken Jr., no. Wade Boggs. He barely got to the 3,000
club.
That's
crazy because he walked so much. He doesn't get enough credit for the level of offensive player that he was. So it's going to be between Palmeiro and Biggio.
Gwynn, Molitor, Eddie Murray.
No.
Dave Winfield. George Brett, Robin Yount. Now we're in an area where these guys are all awesome. Rod Carew, Carl Yastrzemski, Lou Brock, barely got in, but stole over 900 bases.
Sure did. Got caught a lot.
Pete Rose, Al Kaline, he just got in, barely. But he hit for power. Roberto, of course, one of the greats. Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Stan
Musial. What order is that going in?
Greatest. Paul Wehner.
Seriously, I don't understand the...
Now we're getting back to the old days. So I'd say Craig Biggio.
Worst guy in the 3,000 hit club.
And he's a great player, but the worst member of the 3,000 hit
club. Okay, that's probably fair.
Now, after looking at it, that would be who I...
ask my friend Jamin.
Why would... like, Jamin, you've just asked me.
I know. I want to see what he thinks.
Well, who do you think?
I'd go Biggio. Probably,
so we're in
or
agreement.
Palmero, but Palmero had
500
home runs.
Yeah, but Rafi, what am I going to say?
Glowing.
You know what happened?
And got mad at me
You know what happened one time? He got mad at you?
Yeah, when I was score for the Wingnuts, and he was playing and his son was playing, he got mad that I didn't give his son a hit.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, like mad how? Came up to the press box, man?
No, I was down because I had to give the box score to the coaches.
Well, what did he say to you?
I don't remember. Just was not happy.
Was it angry? Did he challenge you to a fight?
I would have handled him. He was 92 at the time.
Well, was it a day game?
No.
So they'd turn the lights off and you could still see him. There it is.
There you go. That wasn't horrible.
That wasn't great. But it's all I had. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I never liked Rafael Palmero.
I don't remember if I liked him or
NBC
disliked.
For the Hutchinson Bronx. Hutch had a run, man. When you can say you had Palmero, you had Barry Bonds, Public Works didn't need to do much in Hutchinson in those years. Just put them on the field and the whole city lit up. There it is. Joined on the hotline now by Derek Tuttle. He's the head football coach at Andover Central. They are off to a flying start with a big, impressive win over Hutchinson in week one. Derek, hello. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate you having me.
So no matter what the expectations are as you go into a new season, and they're high for you guys, you always have that little seed of, I wonder what we're going to see. You had to be pretty happy.
Yeah, we were. I mean, our kids had the theme of wanting to set the tone in game one and kind of set the tone, not so much against exactly Hutchinson per se, but just for the season and for what we want to try to stand for and accomplish this season. And, you know, they did a lot of good things. We had our share of mistakes, but they did a great job kind of setting that tone for the year.
Yeah, what did that show you about the mentality of this team coming off getting to the state championship last year? I'm sure the summer was geared toward another deep postseason run. So what did their play tell you about how badly they want that?
Well, I had a lot of good leadership from our seniors in the summer and accomplishments in the weight room and in the off season. I thought we did a good job with that. And the kids understood that we didn't have our best game, you know, at state title game, not to take anything away from St. Thomas Aquinas, they're a great team, but we didn't handle the option real well in that game. And when you play that flexbone offense, it makes you be very disciplined. And so we spent a tremendous amount of time, and our defensive coaches did a great job this summer and preseason here, getting our kids ready for that. And I think it was Gary Patterson, one of the D1 coaches, said something to the nature of, if you can, you know, prepare for and stop option and do that first defensively, that gives you a lot of preparation to stop just about anything down the road. And so that makes you be assignment sound, and I think that's a great way to start our season is how we came out and we're prepared for that.
Derek Tuttle, our guest, he's a head football coach at Andover Central. They beat Hutchinson 37-7 on the road, and that's, well, we think Hutchinson's going to be a good team. They have been. They got a very, very well thought of coach in Mike Vernon. So you go into that game. When did you what happened in that game, Derek, that kind of turned the tide for you guys?
Yeah, and we whenever you play in a game like that and against the option offense, you kind of hope you get the ball first because you know they're a team like many other running football teams that you know if it's fourth and medium, fourth and short, a lot of times they're going to go for it, and their drives can be very disheartening and you know hurt your morale because you just think you're going to get off the field and then they go for it on fourth down and they get it, and then their drive turns into a really long drive. And so we kind of flipped the tables on that. We took the ball, which we normally do anyway, but we ended up having a really long first quarter drive. I think that took their wind out of their sails a little bit. And, you know, Hutch is a solid football team. They're going to be really good down the stretch, I think. They were without one of their top kids, but I think I heard he'll be back from Coach Vernon. But anyway, that was a big key for us is – that was a long first drive, and then you know we had a little bit of Jace Jefferson to Jace Adler putting the ball on the money on a deep pass, and that got up 14-0. And I think that was a huge key factor just to get a big jump on them early.
Yeah, you do have the two Jaces, as you mentioned, Jace Jefferson, the quarterback, Jace Adler, the receiver, two very, very good returning players. What can you tell us overall about the connection those two have? And when they're going like that, is it hard to maintain the balance that you want going into a game? Because your running game was also very good.
Yeah, we still kind of have the mindset, at least as a team and our coaching staff and our kids, we still have the mindset that we just want to take what we can from the defense, and like whatever they're taking away, we're going to try to do something a little bit different by still trying to get our ball to our playmakers. And sometimes that's very challenging, but yeah, I thought we did a nice job of maintaining the balance of running game and passing game. And sometimes they complement each other. Obviously, the more a team tries to take away the pass, sometimes that opens up the run and vice versa, as you guys know.
Derek Tuttle, our guest from Andover Central. So you've been coaching a while, and you always want to put yourself in position to have this kind of a team. Yeah, your goal is to build a program. But even with that, even with the understanding that Andover Central is going to be pretty good every year, this is a special group, right? This is a group that you guys want to win with and want to win big with.
Yeah, there's a special nature to our senior class. I think those kids have been playing together, and it's a big class. We have about 24 of them out, which for a school our size is a little unusual. You know, if we have over 20 and by the time they're seniors, that's a little on the unusual side. But they're a neat group. They've been playing together for a long time, and they're even coached by back in the Little League days by Mitch Gee, who is one of our equipment and graphics guys. He helps out our team a lot. And it's kind of cool that for him to see them develop and grow over the years. And but they're an exciting bunch, and they're talented in a lot of ways. They play a lot of sports, and which I think any coach would feel lucky to have a group like this because of the nature of the two and three sport athletes we have, but also just a lot of great kids, and very fortunate to have that.
So you're kind of in that group now. Where, you know, you're not going to be challenged a ton the next few weeks, probably.
Don't listen to that, Derek. There's no way in the world you believe that.
You probably don't believe it, but maybe I believe it. I guess the question is then, since you probably don't agree with that premise, is how do you avoid something like last year where you had the three losses in the middle of the season? How did that fuel you then, and how do you avoid it now?
Well, it's kind of our approach from day to day and week to week. I mean, I think we have to be very on top of the kids about our mindset, our focus on improvement, our focus on self-discipline, and those things will really go a long way towards keeping our focus in the right spot. Like I told the kids once we were about ready to kick off Friday, I said, hey, all the preseason talk and all the talk about November is done, you know, but that's preseason hype and all that stuff. Let's focus on what's in front of us right now and today. And if we keep that and are forefront of our minds and on our intentions, then we'll be successful as we go down the stretch. But it's just, I know it's kind of coach speak, but it's just kind of one day at a time. We just got to keep our focus where our feet are.
And I apologize for that premise presented by my offspring.
I liked it.
Derek Tuttle with us from Andover Central. They play at Newton coming up this Friday. And Derek, we really appreciate your time. You've got a heck of a team. We're very fascinated by this offense, and I know it kind of, when that happens, when you have this many playmakers, your defense kind of gets overwhelmed a little bit, at least in the discussion. But you only gave up 7 points against Hutchinson. What do you tell those guys on the defensive side of the ball, and how many of those play offense for you as well?
Well, right now we have three kids that are pretty heavily involved on the offensive side. So Jace Adler, of course, at receiver, and he also plays free safety. Brody DeGarmo at corner, and he also plays a little bit in our 10 personnel package at receiver. And then Dawson Rod is just a tremendous force on both sides of the ball for us on the offensive and defensive lines. And so, and there's a few other kids here and there that that'll help out, but those are the main three. And we try to start as many different kids as we can to keep guys fresh. And yeah, our defense, I thought, it can get overlooked in years like this, but we have some great kids over there done a tremendous job as well. Like, for example, Landon Preston and DeGarmo both had great games and what they helped do against Hutchinson. We had, we even have some up and coming kids too, the underclassmen that stepped up and performed really well, like Jalen Wilson, and even a senior, Carson Green, on defensive line. They don't show up on the stats sheet, you know, but what they did up front against Hutch's offensive line really helped our tacklers get to the ball, and that was a huge factor in the game. And then of course, in special teams, we got a new kicker this year, dual sport kid. Andrew Klaus is a good soccer player for us, and he decided to dual sport it this year and come over and kick for us, and he helped score 7 points for us Friday night. So that was a big deal for him too.
And I need to mention that Jeff alluded to the three games you lost in a row last year. Well, you have those three again right in a row starting in early October: Goddard, Salina Central, Goddard, Eisenhower. So this schedule is certainly not a cream puff one. We wish you the best of luck, Derek, as you move forward. We'll be in touch soon, okay?
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, Derek Tuttle from Andover Central. Man, I'm surprised he didn't jump through the phone.
Oh, they'll win all the three of those games by 15 each.
Really?
Probably. Eisenhower's tough.
What about Goddard? They
Goddard's
beat Mays in their opener, and my very good friend Tommy Beeson.
Love Tom Beeson.
Coaches that team.
He's fantastic. Wonderful human being.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites.
We have a guest.
Tommy, are you listening?
We have a guest in the next segment.
What?
Yeah, it's the first Monday of the week for our show. We got Jamel Hall-Parrott coming up.
Thanks for springing that on me.
Hey, it got sprung on me, too. I forgot.
Why don't you take – I thought you were in charge of that.
I do, and she was booked. I forget everything.
Put it in your phone.
Yeah, I've never done that before, but I might have to start
doing
that.
That's what I do.
Usually I just remember stuff, but not anymore,
no,
my friend.
No, you put it in your phone. That's how you do that stuff. 869-1240, the IHOP hotline. All-you-can-eat pancakes for six more days at IHOP locations here in Wichita. We're joined on that hotline now by Jamel Hall-Parrott from Visit Wichita. We're going to give you a dose of – she hasn't answered yet, I'm told. So Jeff Lutz may be terminated at the end of the show today. We'll have a discussion.
I wonder why.
I thought you'd just spoken with her.
I have.
Well, you know how I love things like this. Right?
Yeah.
You're aware.
It's so good.
You're aware of what I think. So anyway, I wanted to, can we talk about what I was going to talk about?
Well, we're going to get Jamel eventually, but if you want to tease us with what might be next, sure.
I'm highly intrigued by the Big 12, and I was hoping to talk a little bit about how that conference has shaped up so far. the KU loss notwithstanding, which is, in my opinion, the worst defeat yet of any team in the Big 12. Colorado went to Nebraska and got thumped. That either means Nebraska's back. Possible. Matt Rhule can coach.
We do know
or
that.
Or it means Colorado just isn't going to take off.
It could mean both.
Could mean both.
Could mean both things.
But color me in the camp that says Prime ain't going to work out at Colorado.
Yeah, on one hand, I'm a little disappointed by that. On the other, it's like, are you really putting yourself in position for it to work out at Colorado? Because it really looks like you're not. No offensive line, not much of a defense. They've got two really good players.
Andrew, do we have her yet? All right, we have Jamel Haloperic from Visit Wichita. We're going to give you a few events to whet your appetite. How are you doing, Jamel?
Fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing fine. We're happy to have you on. We want to talk about some events, especially the one that's really getting a lot of buzz is the Drone Light Festival at Exploration Place. Tell us about that one.
You know what? That one is fantastic, and it's coming up soon. And it's great because you go out there and you know, they have all the drone lights. You can see it from all over Exploration Place. So if you pull down there, you can just park in your car or get out and sit on the grass, and they do these fabulous displays with all these drone lights, more than 200 different displays. So that's always a fun and fantastic event that people love. And then, hey, we also this weekend coming up, we have Autumn and Art, which you know is huge out there at Bradley Fair, over 90 different local and regional artists, and they have everything from jewelry, painting, glass, ceramics. So people love that Autumn and Art. It kind of gets you in the fall mood.
Yeah,
let me mention the drone festival at Exploration Place. That's coming up the 20th through the 22nd. Go ahead, Jeff.
And Jamel, I was going to ask you particularly about that fall feeling. Obviously, you want to diversify your events as much as possible through all different seasons. But is fall how nice of a season can fall be for events outdoors when it's getting cool? People want to be outside.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, you know, it's just so hot at times to be outside in the summer in Wichita. And when it starts cooling down, Eldersley Farm, I don't know if you've been out there, but it is fantastic. It has outdoor brunches and the outdoor cafe, Nasker Park, live music, the Wave, live music, the Wind Surge. And those are some of the places you can go out to. And a lot of the festivals we'll have, including the Drone Light Festival and Autumn and Art, where you can go outside and enjoy it and not just burn up.
So yeah, that's it's nice not to burn up.
Yes, exactly.
Jamel Haloperic from
Yeah.
Go ahead. My bad.
You're fine. I was just going to say, hey, and on Saturday, too, this is another great outdoor event. It's Play on a Plane out there at the Kansas Aviation Museum, and families can go out there and get on the KC-135, Boeing 727, all different kinds of planes. Food trucks will be out there, and again, another fun event outdoors, and you can see those fabulous planes.
Well, talk about a fun event that goes on for a full month. National Hispanic Heritage Month begins September 15th goes into October, and all kinds of events have been scheduled for that, including a salsa night at the Brickyard coming up on the 13th this Friday. A little early start.
Right. I think that sounds like a fun night. Somebody asked me earlier today when we were talking about it, is it just salsa dancing, or is there also salsa the chip dip? I said, I think they're going to have both. But yeah, I think it's so neat. Hispanic Heritage Month goes from September 15th to October 15th, and there's all kinds of events. Over at Exploration Place, they're having different things, and you can find it all on our events calendar.
How do you, is it easy to coexist when the state fair is going on? Does that detract from anything that's going on in Wichita, or is it just as seamless as ever?
You know what, it kind of does. Because, you know, people want to head over there and see that, which is fine because it's such a great event and they do great work there in Hutchinson. But there's still plenty to do here if you don't want to, you know, drive to Hutchinson. Have you guys been out to the State Fair?
Not yet.
1984, I was there.
Why don't you go to the state fair? It's so nice.
I should go more often, but then again, I've been since 1984, but I've done my state fair duty, and I've settled in here, and if there's a fair that happens in my backyard, I'll certainly be there for it.
Have you ever, Jamel, seen the pig races?
I have seen the pig races. Yes.
Love those.
I have. And you know what? I got to tell you guys something. We did a live.
Yeah, go ahead. Yep, you did a live shot.
Yep. At the Hutch. Am I talking too much, guys?
No. Talk more, please.
Well, we did a live shot at the state fair, and we did a live hit of a baby calf being born. And so we would keep, it was so cool because it was at the state fair, and we would go back and forth, and during that newscast, the baby was born. It was really neat.
Wow.
It was like one of the coolest live shots I did. Yeah, it was fun.
That's beautiful.
That is pretty cool. Anything else you want to add before we bid adieu until next month?
You know what? If people are looking things for to do in Wichita, we have so many fun events and festivals. Just go to visitwichita.com and you can find the events calendar and see what's out there.
Yeah, and how excited, I meant to ask you this. We had Stacy Olden on the radio show last week with the Orpheum now doing their major renovation starting next year. How exciting is that?
That's going to be so fun. I can't wait. I love it when we see improvements like that in our city, and because people take pride in their venues, and so it's going to be fabulous.
Jamel, always a pleasure. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Jamel.
All right, Jamel Haliparek from Visit Wichita. So back to the Big 12. Arizona State off to a kind of a surprising start. I kind of follow Michelle Gardner, their beat writer, on Twitter. They beat Mississippi State 30-23. If you get a win over an SEC team, and Mississippi State's not a terrible team.
No, absolutely not.
That's a decent win for you.
Yeah, it's a good win. Arizona State's kind of sneaky good a little bit. Didn't they win kind of convincingly in week one against somebody that mattered?
Yeah, they beat Wyoming.
Yeah.
You've got Arizona, which is coming to K-State. I'm not sure they're ready for K-State.
I'm not sure K-State's ready for Arizona.
Nah, don't get too high on Arizona yet.
I just want to see more out of K-State.
Well, we'll see more out of K-State.
You don't give Dylan Edwards the ball.
You got to give Dylan Edwards the ball. You got to get him the ball, as we like to say in the game of football. You got to give him the ball in space. You know what I mean?
You don't really turn Avery loose. I just got to see more.
Did you see the play with Dylan Edwards where he's running horizontally, and they pass him the ball, and there's nothing for him to do? Get him down the field, coach.
Just figure out ways. We don't want to see
that's a weapon
again.
You see Xavier Worthy with the Chiefs? That's what Dylan Edwards is.
He's not as fast.
Well, I don't know about
that.
I'd like to see him run.
How did the Chiefs get
Xavier Worthy? Look up Xavier Worthy's 40 time.
3.61.
No, it's not. Look it up.
It's pretty fast.
And I'll look up.
It was the fastest ever at the combine.
Well, Dylan Edwards can run with almost anybody.
4.21.
4.21. Now look up Dylan Edwards.
I bet. Well, it's not the fastest ever, so it's going to be a little higher.
Well, how much slower is it?
Well, it's probably not that much. Give me a second.
I'll say 4.30.
4.41.
Really?
Yes. But that won the Under Armour All-America Game Fastest Man competition. So that was a couple of years ago. He may have gotten faster since then.
Yeah, I would think so. But you never know.
Again, that's 0.2 seconds. Which is basically nothing. It sounds like more, but it's really not.
Well, it sounds like a lot. And then you've got Utah, the consensus pick. They won their opener at home against Baylor.
Their quarterback's hurt again, though.
Yeah, which isn't good. So I'm very intrigued by that conference. not necessarily because of the quality, but because there are a bunch of teams that interest me.
Yeah, but
Iowa State won a game. That game was like watching molasses.
Well, that's what Iowa does.
Iowa's hard to watch. Sorry, Joe Auer. They just are. I'm not sure how Iowa State won it, but you know what you do in that game? You get out of Iowa City with a win.
Exactly. You pass the test.
You don't even look back. So,
do you think?
You know, the most, and I can't believe it took me this long to talk about it. Did you watch Northern Illinois, any of that game?
Yes.
You did.
I watched most of the second half.
You really did?
I did.
Put your hand
up. I watched a lot of football this weekend.
Raise your right hand.
I absolutely did.
That was fun. What's the name of that coach?
I don't remember. You didn't ask me these questions.
That post-game interview, and I'm going to give a lot of credit to the young lady who conducted the interview on NBC, because they hung with it. They kept him on camera for a good amount of time, even as the Northern Illinois Media Relations Yahoo was trying to get him away. What? Dude, let me talk. Let me have a moment.
Well, this is the Northern Illinois.
Let me have a moment with the Northern Illinois media relations guy. You're coming off the biggest upset in your program's history. You're on NBC, where you're getting more eyeballs on your program than you've ever gotten. Your coach is laying it out emotionally, answering every great question with an even better answer, and we're all captivated. And this moron is trying to get him off so he can go talk to the DeKalb
press? Yeah, he's got
to
go do DeKalb radio.
Are you out of your mind?
Hey, he's contractually obligated to go do that post-game radio spot, probably.
There was one fleeting moment where I thought about calling him today.
Really? I doubt we would have gotten through.
Well, I just can't believe that.
Probably has a lot of requests. Was he on Rome today?
I don't know. Was he? You listen to Rome. This was a huge win on the road, Northern Illinois, beating the fifth-ranked Irish.
Lost their best player.
On NBC, the television home of the Irish. And those clowns,
Jason Garrett is the other.
Yeah, and Dan Hicks. Not clown. They're fine, but they're Notre Dame honks.
Yeah, but they captured the moment well.
They did. They did fine. But they were a little, how do we lose? You know.
Yeah, after the game they were. But when it was happening, they gave all
they
the credit
did,
to Northern.
And they better. Because that was, I don't know that we'll have a better moment in college football all season. That one was really fun. And the coach's reaction, and I can't believe you haven't come up with the name.
Well, I didn't look it up.
I'm just astounded.
Derek Rottenham.
No, that's not his name.
I know.
But
it's got a long, he's got a long last name.
I don't get it.
Of course, it's Thomas Hammack.
That guy played at Northern Illinois. He obviously had, there it is, had a lot of emotions going, and they all spilled out. And it was fantastic to watch.
It was fun. The game at the end wasn't fantastic. Notre Dame, what are we doing?
Notre Dame's
not good.
Vastly overrated. Even though what they do in week one.
Beat Texas A&M, who must not be good at all.
They must not be, which is shocking because they were really good last year, right?
A&M?
Weren't they?
Well, they got their coach fired.
Yeah, that's true. Weren't they? But what were they like last year?
Not very good. They bought out Jimbo for $900 million or something like that.
Well, yeah, they lost a bunch of games. They lost six games. My goodness. 7-6.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.
We are joined on the IHOP Hotline now by Tim Fitzgerald, publisher of GoPowerCat.com, all the K-State news you can fathom on that website. Fitz, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Quick turnaround now with Monday press conferences. You get back on Sunday, and you're back up on Monday, but it also gets your week rolling.
Well, interesting game certainly to talk about. I'm sure there were a lot of questions. What did you think? What did you think of I knew this was going to be a big test. Tulane has a good football tradition. They have a good coach, even though he's a first-year coach. He came from a very successful program. They were as good as advertised. Did the Cats come out of that untarnished?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, they know they escaped. They know they had a hard-fought win and, you know, had some fortune go their way and also made some significant plays to help that fortune. And they recognize their mistakes. I asked Chris Kleiman quite a bit about the need to get the ball to Dylan Edwards. Dylan's touched the ball 12 times
this season.
That's it. And he's scored 3 touchdowns and averaged about 10 yards per touch. And Chris Kleiman said, yeah, we got to get him the ball more. That's pretty simple. But so I asked a lot of questions about that performance, Tulane, and I thought they really took them head on. They didn't back away from any question I asked, whether it was to Avery or Coach Kleiman or one of the players. They owned what went wrong in that game, and they know they are 2-0. They're fortunate to be 2-0, and it's going to get a lot tougher with Arizona coming to town.
And before Jeff asks his question, I think you would agree with me that Dylan Edwards, of course, from our neck of the woods here in Derby, can be a big, big threat catching the football. And really the only time he caught one the other day was on a kind of a horizontal thing that had no opening.
Yeah, I would prefer never to see that play again because they ran it a few times and it just never worked. Yeah, you're right. You know, they threw to him in week one. I just feel like there's two things at work here. They're holding back a lot of stuff. They don't want to show stuff with him. And also, it may be Dylan isn't as deep into the playbook in terms of the learning curve that you would want because he didn't come until the summer. So, and the third part is you got to take DJ Giddens off the field to do that quite often, but I would like to see Giddens and Edwards on the field together. So there's a lot going on here, and I'll be interested to see if there's anything different in his usage on Friday night.
Yeah, you basically answered all of my questions that I had essentially about the K-State offense. But one thing, and maybe it didn't resonate with anybody but me, I just felt like at the end of the game, toward the end of the game, K-State's last drive, they didn't try to move the ball, only up a touchdown. Did that surprise you at all?
Yeah, I thought they were way too conservative there. I probably... I certainly wouldn't have thrown the ball unless it was a really safe pass, but I think maybe a little more misdirection, a little more, you know, getting the Tulane defense looking the wrong way might have been good. Maybe an Avery, you know, bootleg would have been appropriate. They certainly loaded up to stop DJ Giddens there, and it worked. And I thought that was a real failure of the K-State offense because they had an opportunity to basically close that game out. And they gave the ball back and plenty of time for that Tulane offense to get it done, and they all but got it done.
Talking with Tim Fitzgerald, our frequent guest here on the show, talking K-State Tulane, and, of course, K-State with a Friday game this week against Arizona. Darian Mensah kind of came out of nowhere. This kid is a redshirt freshman. His offers out of high school were to Lindenwood, Idaho State, and Tulane. Did he catch K-State's defense and their preparation by surprise? Because he was really letting it fly in that first half.
I don't know if they caught him by surprise. I just think, honestly, bluntly put, K-State's back end of the defense stunk during the first half. And then they got the rhythm going. They did exactly what you couldn't do with Tulane, the same thing they did last time. They let them get comfortable and feel like they could play with K-State, and they did play with K-State. So in the second half, Coach Klieman and Joe Klanderman, his defense coordinator, decided they had to go more pressure, that he was finding open receivers, whether they dropped back in coverage or rushed. And so they even brought more heat, and it really disrupted him in that second half. And, of course, it eventually caused the forced fumble that was a scoop and score for K-State that allowed them to win the game. So that was a good call. They needed to adjust things defensively, and they did. But you can't just start loading the box against every Big 12 opponent to come after the quarterback. You have to have some balance to your defense. And, boy, that secondary, which I thought would be a strength of this team, looked really shaky in the game.
What does Avery Johnson look like as a fully evolved college quarterback? And you said they're probably holding back a little bit with Dylan Edwards. Do you think they're holding back at all with Avery, just turning him loose? And what do you think he ultimately looks like as a passer?
I think he's going to have to adjust to pocket passing. It's not always been his thing. We could see in the game the obvious tendency to be more accurate when he's rolling out or under pressure. He really does a nice job with that. You know, one of his touchdowns was that way, and he had an incredible third down pass to pick up a first down when he was rolling out. And he's still young. We got to keep that in mind. As good as he is, he's still got a lot of things to learn. And I also think the coaches need to learn how to use him. Maybe they've been bottling him up, but I would expect we're going to start to see Avery Johnson with more design stuff with his legs as we proceed, because let's be honest, teams are probably realizing you need to pay attention to the running backs too. They've been trying to take away Avery Johnson, but then, you know, trying to ignore Dylan Edwards or DJ Giddens just doesn't work either. So pick your poison. And so far they've been picking to now not let Avery go wild. Maybe Arizona will do the same thing, but I also think K-State will do some things to get Avery more involved. And I think getting him involved early with a quarterback run scheme will get him passing the ball better.
Talking with Tim Fitzgerald, K-State coming off a 34-27 win on Saturday against Tulane down in New Orleans. I want to kind of switch gears and ask you about Kansas and as it relates to Kansas State. Both teams have new people taking care of the play calling as offensive coordinators. That's an extremely important role for any football coach. How much do you think that's playing into maybe some of this early conservatism on the part of K-State and whatever it was we saw from Kansas?
Yeah, I think there's a point to it, and I think they are holding some stuff back, but I also think Connor Riley's going through the learning process of calling plays. He had success in the bowl game, but now it's, you know, plenty of time to scout and settle in. Everyone's got their frontline players at this point of the season, so they're running into that. They have to be more creative, more varied on offense to be successful in the future, and I think we'll see them open it up a little more. I won't be really alarmed about this offense unless they come out really stagnant again against Arizona in the first half, because they've been stagnant their first two games in that first half and just really haven't looked engaged or motivated. And they come out after a halftime, a little tongue-lashing, and get it going. They just have to be good in the first half if you're going to beat an Arizona team that can put up a lot of points.
Well, Jeff Grimes, who has that role now at Kansas, replacing Andy Koltelnicki, who went to Penn State, Jeff Grimes is really catching it. I don't know if you got to see that game, but Kansas looked at times rather inept offensively. They played well in most other phases of the game, but they could never get it going offensively, and Jalen Daniels just didn't have it.
Yeah, it was difficult to watch. I mean, I literally tweeted as I was watching the game that my shock that KU was going to lose the game. Now, Illinois treated it like their Super Bowl, which is a huge compliment to Kansas. Let's just be blunt. Jalen Daniels got to be better than that. He just does, and he's capable of being better than that. So I think that was probably a humbling performance for him and for a lot of people that, you know, were totally bought in on him, like me, that he could be an incredible playmaker. So you just wonder now about the injury and his time off and losing rhythm or all those things, because that did not look like a Jalen Daniels type of performance.
So we were talking last segment, it might be that Arizona State, at least for name value, has the two best wins. Is that a reflection on what the Big 12 will be? Are they going to be better than people think? Or do you think ultimately the cream kind of rises to the top, or is it going to be still 5-6 teams that might rise to the top?
Yeah, well, let's hold off on Arizona State, but they didn't mess around in this non-conference schedule. I mean, they just beat Mississippi State. Now they're going to Texas State, which is a really good football program this season. And if they survive this 3-0, it says a lot about them, because they had one of they'd lined up a pretty challenging non-conference schedule. But I think everything will start to shake out when we really do start conference play full on. We get our first conference game with TCU and who is it? I can't remember who it is. It's not TCU. It's UCF and someone playing the first conference game of the season. We'll start to see it kind of boil out. I think some of the teams we thought wouldn't be good, like Houston, Cincinnati, aren't particularly good. And we'll see how everyone starts to sort it out. But with the 16-team conference, you get wildly imbalanced schedules. Some teams pull really difficult schedules. Colorado did. And other ones pull pretty easy schedules. And I think Cincinnati might fall into that. So we'll find out how things sorted out.
All right. We always enjoy our conversations, Fitz. Thanks for coming on. K-State at home this Friday evening, 7 o'clock kickoff against Arizona. Of course, you can hear pregame, the game, and postgame right here on KFH. Fitz, thanks.
Nice, boys. It's going to be a weird Friday night with both teams playing.
That is going to be weird. Thanks. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Tim Fitzgerald talking about Kansas State football. Yeah. What else do you have? Do you have anything else to add?
Not really. I think we put it all out there in that segment.
KU playing also Friday night.
Yeah, they need a bounce back. That was pretty bad.
Not good.
I didn't stick with that one.
And UNLV is not a slouch.
I don't know. Maybe they are, maybe they're not.
No, I know. When I say something, you don't need to qualify anything. What you say is yes, sir, if you say so.
Is that right? I think that's kind of what I said.
Well, no, you said, I don't know.
They beat Utah Tech, and they beat Houston.
They're not a slouch.
They beat Houston 27-7. Who struggled with Houston over was it Oklahoma?
Yeah.
So we'll see, maybe.
And Oklahoma State, your team, struggled with Arkansas.
Yeah.
But they did pull it out.
I was going to send my friend David Michael Hanna a thank you Arkansas text.
Did your friend Jamin ever get back to you on?
Yeah, and I hesitate to tell you.
Did he say Lou Brock?
Yes.
He's an idiot.
It's not an idiotic take.
Look what Lou Brock did. First of all, look what he did in the World Series. He's one of the great postseason players of all time. And I know that doesn't mean anything to you and Jamin. Oh, let's watch. Look at what he did. It's June 8th. And he had three hits.
Are you going to be okay?
I mean, look, you got to take things into account. And that's what's wrong.
We're talking about guys with 3,000 hits.
That's what's wrong
so
with.
You're already starting at a Hall of Fame level.
That's what's wrong with the younger generation.
What?
Look what Lou Brock did. When we come back,
he
I'll
did have the lowest
it.
WAR by a lot of all 3,000 hit guys.
Good.
Whatever. Take whatever you want from
good.
Him. 300-plus caught stealing? That's not great.
You know what he had? He had the highest love.
What? Peace?
Yeah, he had the lowest war but the highest love.
Highest peace?
Love. Oh. Love is, to me, rules the world.
Absolutely. Why wouldn't it?
All right, we had a little discussion about who is the, what's the right term? The least talented member
really talented.
Of the least. Well, what's
the worst player in the 3,000 hit club?
But you can't use the word worst for somebody who has 3,000.
You shouldn't.
Hits.
But that's what we're talking about here.
You and your friend Jamin, who I could put in a dark room and you wouldn't know where the light was.
Well, that's probably true for most dark rooms.
No, I know a lot of lights. Here's what you came up with. Lou Brock.
Yeah, that's probably the right answer.
Had 10,300 career hits, or career at bats.
That'd be a lot.
He batted .293. Biggio had about 500 more at bats in his career, batted .281. A .112 OPS for Biggio, a .107 OPS for Brock.
Okay, so better.
Here's the difference.
I'll tell you the difference.
In the postseason, Craig Biggio, in the postseason, batted .234 with a .618 OPS.
Yeah, against pitchers.
I could have put my wife up there.
Weren't changing oil the night before the game.
Lou Brock in the postseason played in 3 World Series. Okay, 21 games. All of them went 7 games. Biggest drama you can imagine. You know what he did? He batted .391. He had a .079 OPS.
That's good.
4 home runs, 13 runs batted in, 14 stolen bases. And you know what he did? He looked over in the crowd and saw a 3-year-old Craig Biggio and said, "Try that, pal."
Well, clairvoyant. That's impressive. Biggio played 3 up the middle positions. Lou Brock played left field.
Please.
The easiest position on the diamond.
Biggio.
To play. He did.
Give me a break.
Well, that's where a lot of his value comes from. The fact that he started his career as a catcher. Went
by
to
the
second
way, this
base.
Was a pretty appropriate. Biggio born in 65. So in the 68 World Series, Brock could have looked over at him and said, "Hey, pal. Try to top this someday."
How old does it make you feel that Craig Biggio is almost 60?
But do you see what I'm saying?
It makes me feel really old. Thanks for asking.
I got pretty close on that.
Sure. Good math.
Sometimes I feel like you just don't know what to do with me. Is that accurate?
Not really.
Because it's going to get worse.
When?
Soon.
How? Why?
Because I'll even start to become more disconnected than I am.
That's not going to be fun.
And there'll be a day where you go home and you tell your wife, "You know, I wonder if it's time."
You think that hasn't happened already?
Yeah, I don't think that's happened.
No, it has.
No, it hasn't.
Of course it has.
You think it might be time now?
No, but I bring that up every now and then, like, "I'm tired of radio."
No, I'm talking about, is it time to look for
a replacement for you?
Facility.
Oh.
Have you had that discussion?
No, we have not.
But you have had the discussion about maybe we've come to the... I don't think the listeners like that.
Not really the end. I don't think... No, but I mean, this is getting hard.
What's getting hard about it?
It's just mentally taxing at times.
Well, of course, everything's mentally taxing.
Okay, so some days...
I haven't had a day in my life that I wasn't taxed.
Some
mentally.
Days that catches up with you. Most days it doesn't, and you go from there.
I often wonder, what if I just woke up in the morning and had nothing? Would I be able to adapt to that? Would I be able to? My wife doesn't
what do you
think
mean?
I would. Just having nothing. If I suddenly said, "No more radio, time for somebody younger to take on League 42, what would my day look like?
I don't know. What would sustain you at that point?
I don't know.
Because obviously you feel like you need those things in your life.
Most days. Some days not.
Welcome to life.
I've done this for a long time. I've done this mental game. You wake up every day and you got, "Oh my gosh, I got this responsibility. I got to do that. Things are happening," like everybody else.
Sure, it's day by day, one day at a time.
But retirement. Now, I know a lot of people who wouldn't even think of retiring, but I also know a lot of people who did retire. and are they happy?
Stay somewhat active.
I know some who did retire and don't stay.
Who?
I'm not going to give
people
names.
Out there, they're just not, the fulfillment is coming from doing nothing, or do you think they lack fulfillment?
I think it could be both. I think there are some people whose fulfillment comes from the knowledge that they worked for 40 years, and they're not going to work anymore, and no, they don't need anything to fill their time. They're perfectly happy finding something to read or some kind of hobby or whatever it is.
There you go. The hobby is the same.
Well, I don't think I don't have any hobbies.
Why not?
What are my hobbies?
I don't know.
Right.
You write on Facebook every now and then.
Is that a hobby?
Kind of. Doesn't get you anything.
Well, why doesn't it? Could I monetize that?
Well, give it a shot.
YouTube people monetize it. Our friend Bernie Miklas started a YouTube show, and apparently he's making some money off of it.
Good for him.
Should I sit down here every day and just start to talk into the computer and
yes,
get a YouTube channel going?
Yes, you should. Please do that.
Why? Why would you want...
I think that'd be entertaining.
What would I talk about?
Whatever you want to talk about. Pretty much like we do on this show.
Well, maybe I will. How do you do it?
Just do it.
Don't you have
to... How do you do anything? You just do it.
Don't you have to get YouTube to buy in? Somehow he got YouTube to buy in.
No, I don't think there's... Really? Like, it's not like sponsored by YouTube.
You can subscribe. Apparently you get monetary.
Well, he created a channel.
Right. How do I do that?
I'm sure there's an easy click or two. You can go on the YouTube website and figure that out.
What would I say?
I don't know. That's up to you.
I'm not. Well, he's not really active in the game anymore either. He's just a guy. He doesn't work for a newspaper. He
Does
has
he
a
get
column.
Credentialed?
Could, potentially, I suppose. But I'm just a guy now. I'm not anything. You know, who wants my opinion? Wait a minute. I have a daily radio show. I forgot about
that. That's probably enough, right?
Don't you think?
Yeah.
How many people in the world have a daily radio show?
Thousands.
Not that many.
Percentage-wise, no.
But, I mean, a lot of people, yes. But maybe I could turn that into something.
If you haven't already.
Well, I haven't thought about it.
Well, talk to Tony. They wanted us to do endorsements. We got people working on that for us.
See, I don't know. I don't
me.
Know.
Let's do it.
I just don't know if I'm interested in all this stuff. I'm interested in helping Odyssey. But I'm 70 years old. What endorsement do I have?
I don't know.
Bedpans? Do we do those?
I bet we could.
Stainless steel?
Well, you got kitchen people coming. Maybe you could endorse them
maybe
on the
radio. Maybe I will.
Make sure you get that check.
All right. Thanks, Andrew, back in the studio. We'll be back tomorrow. Vahe Gregorian from the Kansas City Star will join us. See you then.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Ryder remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.